All right, everyone. Gather around. Gather around, please. Thank you. First off, I'd like to thank everyone for another great year. We rented out more copies of Cutthroat Island than I ever thought imaginable. I'm sure the estate of Rennie Harlan is very grateful.
Yay.
I see. You don't care about business talk. You want to hear about what we're doing for our big holiday party, right?
Meh.
Never.
You can try and hide your excitement, guys, but you can't fool me. Well, I won't keep you waiting any longer. Chad, could you put on some mood music, please? For this year's big holiday party, I'm closing the store so we can play Dungeons and Dragons.
Whoa, really?
Yes.
Finally, something fun.
You see, I told you you'd be excited.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movieless wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Shouldn't we wait for Ryan?
Well, unfortunately, he's going to be in Citadel until next week. He couldn't get an appointment to see anybody about his Avatar Depression Syndrome until late last week, so he's not going to be able to make it tonight.
Aw, that sucks. Well, I call dibs on the Rogue character!
Ah, so you're a Mad Mardigan fan, are you?
Mad Mar... what?
Mad Mardigan. The Rogue? I'm sorry. I should have clarified. Technically, we are playing Dungeons & Dragons, but it's the Willow expansion.
Oh, sweet.
This keeps getting better and better.
I know, right? I told you this year's holiday party was going to be off the hook.
Wait. Hold on. What does Crispin Glover have to do with Dungeons & Dragons?
Crispin Glover? What are you talking about, Mike?
Yeah, you said we're playing a Willard expansion?
No. Willow. You know, Warwick Davis, Willow.
Oh, so you mean Wicket, the Ewok? So this is like a Star Wars expansion or something?
Star Wars? No, Mike. Willow. This is a Willow expansion.
Quit playing around, Mike. I want to get started. I call General Kale.
I'll be Queen Bev Morda. I want to turn Dave into a pig.
Oh, whoa. I guess I'll be Willow then, if no one else is going to claim him. Okay, let's get started.
Whoa. Hold up. What the hell is Willow?
Very funny, Mike. Stop pretending like you don't know what Willow is.
I'm assuming it's like some sort of fantasy or maybe comic book thing.
Wait. Are you being serious right now?
You've really never heard of Willow?
The greatest sorcerer who ever lived. Number one at the box office on May 20th, 1988. Story by George Howard the Duck Lucas. Directed by Ron Happy Days Howard.
I've got nothing.
Oh, jeez.
That's embarrassing.
I can't believe you.
Oh, come on. I'm sorry my Ron Howard Bonafides aren't up to snuff.
Well, I'm sorry, everyone. But until Mike brushes up on his Willow knowledge, we'll have to postpone the game.
Oh, man.
Really?
I know how to play Dungeons & Dragons, Dave. Does it really matter that I've never seen some obscure Ron Howard movie?
Obscure? Okay, wise guy, tell me. What's a brownie?
A brownie? A delicious treat?
Oh, boy.
That's what I thought. Chad, load up Willow. We've got to teach this peck a thing or two about high fantasy.
From the creator of Star Wars. From the director of Cocoon. A world is awakening.
Why, with the strength of my great army, can you not find one little child?
It's a dangerous world.
That's why we need your help.
Your journey has just begun.
Willow. Heroes come in all sizes. But adventure doesn't come any bigger than this.
Find the child. Find the child.
We are not afraid of you. After them!
You're gonna get us killed.
Adjust them completely.
The next great adventure.
You are great.
Willow.
Well, that was Willow.
Blowing out Mike's first thing.
I'm your host, Dave. I'm joined again by Michael.
It's beer!
He's not a woman! He's not a woman! I'm also joined by Jackie.
I'm a beautiful young woman.
Has it been that long? I can't. I'm sorry. I will be doing that voice for the whole episode.
There's
probably
a lot of really good voices in here. You just want to keep saying, like, Willow.
And I'm joined by our own General Kale and Morton Hoof, a.k.a. Nick.
Na 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 na.
Oh my god, that was my favorite part of this movie. Basically everything involving what is the sorceress name? Finn Rizzell. Like, I don't know why, but she made me laugh every time, especially at that moment, which we'll get to later, where she's just going, "No, no, 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 no."
It's like the South Park episode with magicians.
Yes, it very much is. But we're talking about Willow, and this is one that we've been wanting to do for a long time. This is kind of like a favorite of childhood for me. What about you guys?
Oh, wow.
I remember seeing it at least a couple times as a kid, and there were things that stuck out to me, mostly the brownie stuff. But in my mind,
which
it was
just... Which is a race of people, not actual brownies.
It's not a tasty treat. It's some tiny little comic relief figures. So those stuck out to me a lot as a kid. But my mom was a huge Tolkien nerd, so that was the main fantasy in our household.
Are there any like similarities between this and Tolkien?
I can't think of like even one, so I don't know what her thing was.
Completely different.
We'll get into that.
But yeah, so that it existed is like, oh yeah, that you know, that other kind of, you know, example of the genre. But again, there was... It was Lord of the Rings for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Well, what about you, Mike? Because I know your parents, especially your mom's, like a huge Star Wars fan. So does that translate to this other Lucasfilm property?
Well, I'll just say up until like a couple weeks ago, I thought we were watching the movie Willard about rats. Like, I thought that's what Willow was. So, no.
Oh, David, Nick really liked this movie about rats.
This is my first time seeing the movie, and I didn't really know anything about it.
You never seen it before at all?
No, I haven't even, like, until we did this, I hadn't heard of it.
Oh, shit.
I hadn't even
really?
Heard of it.
No.
Wow.
I mean, I heard the name Willow, and I think in my head, I always thought, oh, Willard? Is that like Willard?
Again, the rats?
That's as much thought as I gave it.
Oh, man.
To be fair, there are rats in this movie, oversized dog rat things.
Oh, yeah. Some good classic put some junk on a dog.
those things are probably my favorite part of the movie, to be honest.
They were scary.
It was good. They look good in some of the scenes. Yeah, what about you, Nick?
Well, for me, Willow wasn't a staple in my childhood. I saw it not when I was like a kid, like, you know, 7 or 8. I think I saw it a little bit later.
I saw it when I was a big kid.
Yeah, when I was a big kid. but nonetheless, I always loved fantasy. Like when I was a kid, Neverending Story and Dark Crystal and movies like that were kind of staples in my household. For some reason, Willow always flew under the radar, but it was a movie that, I don't know, we didn't have the VHS, but it definitely had fond memories of Willow. And I remember I first heard about it in grade school when this kid asked me, "Have you seen Willow?" And then all of a sudden he just goes, "Willow!" And I'm like, and I'll never forget this classmate of mine doing that voice.
It's infectious.
Yes.
Yeah, so, Willow!
Willow! So, but yeah, I definitely have been a huge fan of Willow for a long, long time. I think it's a cool, I mean, it's definitely not top tier, but it's still very fun, very endearing. A lot of that, you know, just magic of fantasy. And it's done. I think this movie is very endearing to me.
Oh, yeah.
That's the perfect word to describe this movie, because it wasn't a box office like sensation. Like, I think it made more money overseas, and ultimately where it kind of made its bank was in VHS and TV sales. So not to say it was a box office flop, like it made money overall, but like it was not the hit that they were hoping it would be. But this is a movie that's like endearing and I think has endured over the years. Like this, like I mentioned VHS, like this, I feel like this was one of those movies where it was kind of discovered later by a lot of people, certainly by me on VHS. And I mean, the money's on screen. I mean, this does not look like a cheap movie. It looks like an expensive movie. All the effects are there. All the names are there. Like Lucas, old Ronnie Howard directing.
I didn't like this movie.
Wow.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
Willow.
You said it was
darkness in his heart.
I was having some flashbacks to the money on the screen. But like, you're right, the money's on the screen. But I was having some flashbacks to Cutthroat Island with this one.
No way.
Yeah, where
there
it
is
just,
like, there is like actual chemistry between actors in this movie. There's heart.
This is better than Cutthroat Island.
Okay,
sure.
You can
for
at least
sure.
concede that point.
For sure. But it was that, I don't know if it was the direction or like it. I
what are you talking
like
about? Ron Howard is the most okayest director there's ever been.
I feel like there was some just like, yeah, some like sterile. I have no idea about how this movie was made, but just from watching it, it felt like there was like a sterile, like Ron Howard signature sterility to this movie.
Mike, I think the problem
reminded me of
might
Cutthroat
be
Island.
I think the problem is you've been holding on to that magical acorn too long, and it's just turned your heart to stone.
Oh, yeah. Then
I'll
use it at the end, and then it's not going to matter anything.
Well,
I think you might have to carry a baby around to learn a lesson.
Legally, this is not a ring that we're carrying around. It's a baby. I think I was, a lot of the movie, just surprised at like how, like, the chutzpah they had to make this, like, this is just Lord of the Rings. Like, this is legally distinct from Lord of the Rings. Although I'll say, like, to its credit, I was wondering, like, obviously the Lord of the Rings existed before this, but filmmaking wise and how it's some of these scenes look, I was wondering if Peter Jackson was like getting some inspo from this for
the young New
for
Zealander
his
lads watching.
I could see that.
Because some of the just like set design is so. It's like shockingly similar, even to the point where like probably at the same runtime in of both of these movies, you have like, now here's like the ice mountain scene.
Okay.
You
but
know, it's ironic that this movie ripped off Lord of the Rings, but yet Lord of the Rings also ripped off Willow.
It's a snake eating its fantasy
circle
tail.
Circle of life. Yes. It's a basilisk eating its own tail.
Well, it is interesting to think because, like we just said, this is the first time that Mike's seen it. So, you know, I think that Willow definitely is a movie that if you don't have any child sentimentality about it, it would be a little bit harder to connect, because I think objectively I recognize that this is obviously not the best movie at all. But
it's a little goofy, especially with the brownies.
Yeah, the brownies.
Wear thin really fast, in my opinion.
That was what I remembered so distinctly of like being like a little kid watching this and being like, oh, that's the funny stuff. And now watching it, I was like, okay, let's get back to the plot. can we please get back to...
Imagine, this is one of those movies, like, make a drinking game for how many times a character says, the tale of broken hearts or whatever that magic dust was. Yeah. Like, they say that so many times. Oh, God.
The dust of broken hearts.
We go this way? No, we go that way.
It's a whole lot of that. The
bits are falling flat.
They sure are. But then you get
a lot of bits.
You get like that Warwick Davis 17-year-old cutie. Like
just, he was 17.
He was a little. He was just a baby.
He was when they were making Jedi. George Lucas talked to Warwick Davis. He's like, I want you to be Willow. In 5 years.
Hey, I did see give that me a call when you can sign contracts.
I think to me, that's the biggest strength of this movie is Warwick Davis. Yeah. Like, he rules. Yeah.
I agree.
He doesn't carry just the baby. He carries the film.
He doesn't carry that one ring baby.
He would have been a good Frodo.
He's just, like
back in the day, if they made it in 2001.
You know what? There's something I want to point out that I'm developing a fan theory about Mike. I think he hates movies that have very small creatures because he hated Indian in the Cupboard too. So maybe it's just he's just as an aversion to these.
Yeah,
tiny
but hold
people.
On, hold on. I bet he liked Ghoulies.
That's not the same as the little like shrunken. Not the same.
I didn't hate this movie. This movie is also better than Indian in the Cupboard.
Okay,
I just didn't like it. I don't have hate. I feel sad about this movie because I feel like there's something there. There's potential there. It just I don't know what the problem is with it, but it just kind of falls flat to me. And like it's too long.
It is long.
It's a little long. Yeah,
it's cut out all the brownie bits, and then
there's a lot of like.
It's
one of those. Movies where there's just a lot of like, whoa! Like a lot of those scenes. Like too many of those scenes.
There is.
There is a lot of whoa, Willow.
So, to keep on the brownie talk, I was thinking while I was watching this movie, after I don't know an hour or so or whatever, I was like, why are the brownies in this movie? I mean, I was asking that, and I think there's one reason why they're in this movie, and that's so they can pick that lock. That's it.
My thought was. It felt very George Lucas to me to be like, okay, we have like a race of like small people that'll be our protagonists. Like, what if they encounter a race of even smaller people? That feels like a George Lucas move.
Are
to
they
me.
Basically like the 3PO? Are the brownies like the 3PO and R2 this movie?
I guess they are.
They're
the
hidden fortress characters.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone to run around yelling things and then come in a pinch.
It is.
And also the Jar Jar too. I would put them in Jar Jar status. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah. Very Lucas.
So we got to get some other little guy in there.
And ironically, they were the key. They unlocked the key. The lock.
It's like poetry.
They're the key.
I think maybe
Bernie's are the key to
maybe all the thing is like George Lucas needs like you can't just film what George Lucas wants. You have to like punch it up. And I feel like Ron Howard is a very... His directing style is like, I will just film what is on...
Yeah, he's not the one who's going to be punching
but
it
But if
up.
You had had, like, a Spielberg to direct this, like an Indiana Jones situation, I bet he would have, like... He would have known what to... Like, we're not doing that, George. And
well,
like,
thankfully, this movie was not written by George Lucas. It was only story by...
Yeah, but it's like... I know it wasn't written by him, but it's like... This feels pretty Lucas-y.
George Lucas has a writing credit.
Yeah, well, he has a story by. It was written by, I think the guy's name was Bill Tolman?
Bob Dolman.
That was close.
It was a B name.
It's Bob Dolman.
Bob Dolman.
Or okay. Bob Dollman.
Dollman.
Bob Dollman. Okay. I mean, Lucas is a guy, I think I've said this on the podcast before, and this has been shared by a lot of other people as well, but he's an idea man. Like, you don't want Lucas writing the script for the... Well,
he's a story
that's
by.
The thing. He did like, Star Wars, though. He did do New Hope.
He's a story by guy. And yeah, and that's yeah. I think that's not the like core problem with the movie. I think the thing is, like, if you're doing story by George Lucas, you gotta have a more finger on the pulse director than Ron Howard. Like, it's gotta be like a Spielberg or a Lawrence Kasdan.
He's a workman director. Like,
he is like you need to hand Ron Howard like a good script and like rock solid thing to film.
Well, it's interesting. Can I ask you guys about Ron Howard a little bit? Because I feel like growing up and even now, Ron Howard is a name that is very recognizable to me. But when I look at his work, I mean, I guess Apollo 13, but I'm like, why do I know this? Why is his name so like prominent in my head?
Because he's such a nice guy.
I guess so.
He's just made a lot of movies that like perform decent,
and he is also just like before he was a director. It's like he's been in the business since he was like a little kid, and he's been next to a whole bunch of big directors or moments or cultural touchstones without necessarily being like, oh, that's my favorite element of it. He's always kind of there, and he was very importantly existed only in my mind in the early 2000s as the voice on Arrested Development. Yeah, and he was good at that. So
I mean, he's made like a lot of varied movies that do well. Like he did, like just rattling off some random ones, like Apollo 13, of course. You got that 2000 Grinch movie that did really well with Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
He did A Beautiful Mind. That was like his next movie, which did well and got, I think, some Oscar stuff. The Da Vinci Code movies he did, which...
Oh, I forgot that was him.
Did well. A Star Wars.
He can make
Cocoon,
money.
Splash.
He's very American.
He is.
What?
Does that make sense to anyone?
What does that mean?
It's very if okay, follow me here.
I mean, if you know, you know.
Is this another theory?
No.
I have this theory that Ron Howard is American.
No, he's just very I don't know how I would describe it. Very okay, so he's very unflavorful. Very like textbook. Like it feels like looking at his body of work, he has a range. He definitely has a range, so that's good. That
he's done a lot of varied movies.
Yeah,
like, I don't know if you could really knock him down to one specific thing.
Exactly,
he's a workman's director. He can he'll take a job. And
yeah, that's a better way of saying it.
He's American.
Well, I knew what you meant.
Okay, well, okay. So Jackie knows what I mean.
It's just, I mean, even by other American standards, it's like he's, like I said earlier, he's the world's most okayest director. There's nothing wrong with that. It sounds like a real dig, but it's like, it's better than being like the worst, I guess.
So I think, I mean, while we're talking about kind of like shortcomings of Willow, I think Willow has a couple definite shortcomings, and I think the brownies are definitely one of them. And I also think the romance is very like cheap. Like it's almost like they didn't know how to write this romance in a way, and it just feels so like B movie romance.
And the ironic thing is, it resulted in a real life romance between Val Kilmer and Joanne Whaley, and they ended up getting married and having kids.
Good for them. I would not have predicted that from this performance, because the like emotional depth of those two on screen as written is like just someone slamming two Barbies together and being like, and then they kiss. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. That's the perfect
analogy.
And then
they throw it away and they're like, back to Willow with the baby, and he's gonna...
That's definitely the vibe this movie has.
Every time they need Val Kilmer, they just grab the half-naked Ken doll and they wave him around, and then they toss him off screen again.
And, well, it's that damn line again. It always comes back to the fairy broken hearts or whatever the hell that fairy
magic
dust was
called.
That scene was
very funny to me because he gets like the stupid powder and he sits back and he's all goofy, you know, eyed. But then he looks at Willow and at first I was like, is he gonna fall in love with Willow?
Exactly.
I was like, no homo, this will only work. And then he goes in the tent, he goes to get the baby, and I had a second moment of fear of like, oh god, Twilight style, is he gonna fall in love with the baby? But no, don't worry, this potion powder, whatever, only works on heterosexual adults.
Well, it's like,
no,
like,
that's
like,
the
I'm
thing.
Sure.
That's the thing.
It also works on cats.
Yeah,
and
that's
cats.
That's what happens because the brownie falls in love with the cat, which I actually thought was pretty funny.
That's the first thing he sees.
Yeah.
So I assumed it was going to be something of, I don't know, but no, he just sees a sleeping woman and it says, I'm going to do stuff.
And what's even funnier, like, so it's like from his point of view, I can at least understand why he's falling in love with her because he was afflicted with the magic dust. There's a reason there. But from her point of view,
scary.
No.
Well, when you say beautiful words like you are my sunshine or whatever the hell.
Yeah, how
saying.
Is a woman not supposed to fall in love?
And she instantly falls. She's like, really?
Like, really? You like me?
Her, you know? And, like, all it takes later is, I guess, just the sexiness of Val Kilmer. Because later in the movie, in towards the third act, she just sees him being cool, basically.
He's like, okay.
Because she just watches him, like, ooh, check that guy out.
Maybe I won't be evil.
He knows how to handle his sword.
Exactly. That's what it boils down to. She just kind of checks him out, like killing people. She's like, not bad.
Yeah, that's what women are like.
Well, I think what this movie, to take a more critical take, I think the movie is really trying to suggest the power of words of affirmation.
Yeah, this movie's about love languages.
I was
thinking,
honestly, my thought was like maybe this is like a Big Fish situation, like with Danny DeVito. Like even like the most like evil creatures, they just need love. You know, they just want to be loved.
who picked this movie? Well, wait, YouTube?
I definitely made sure that we did this.
I think Dave and Nick, like the brownies, like a pair, should walk through like what this movie is. Because I feel like a lot of people might be listening and like, what the heck is going on with this movie?
Oh, right, the plot.
Well,
oh.
Yeah, but the plot.
Like with any good fantasy story, there's a prophecy.
Yeah. This I'm sure we'll get more into it, but even just like scrolling through the plot synopsis, Willow does exist very much as like what people who don't like fantasy think fantasy is. We're like, every character is named Bavmorda Nelwyn
Mad
Martigan,
which is
the
most fantasy sounding name ever.
Mad Martigan.
Every single one is just like, oh, come on.
To speak to that, thing before we get into the plot, I think it's classic that we're talking about these fantasy names, Mad Martigan, Bavmorda, but then we get Eric.
And Eric, but it's spelled very stupidly, don't worry.
Oh, that's what it is.
It's
okay,
spelled like air, like what we breathe, K.
All right, now it's a fantasy name.
Eric Fogbear.
Yeah, throw like another Y in there. And
so
anyway,
Nick,
go ahead.
Tell us about the prophecy.
Well, there's an evil queen and...
Bavmorda of Nakmar.
That is one thing I will never tire of. I will always laugh at goofy ass fantasy names.
These fantasy names have to be said in like Bavmorda of Nakmar.
It's where you know you kind of look at George R. R. Martin writing Song of Ice and Fire, and you're like, yeah, and this one's name is John. Like that's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, let's keep it simple.
And this one is
this
Ned.
Is Ned.
Yeah. And her name's Catelyn. We'll call her Cat, okay?
So what's Bavmorda up to, Nick?
Well, she's just trying to preserve her reign of tyranny, and there's supposed to be a baby coming along to wreck her plans, right? And so she's inspecting all the babies in the land. All the pregnant women are, like, being taken. We're going to inspect the babies. And then there's a mark they're looking for, and this is a part of the prophecy which will result in her downfall.
So this is like Jesus, isn't it? Isn't this like a Jesus thing? Like the Roman king
there's
at the time was like...
There's definitely some biblical parallels here. Like
You got Jesus and then Moses happening.
Jesus, yeah. Moses, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. So anyways,
this is Jesus Moses.
The baby shows up. They spot the baby because it's got the mark on the arm. And then I guess the... What's the
midwife?
The midwife.
Midwife smuggles out the baby.
Yeah, smuggles out the baby, and then...
And she could book it, man, because she only has maybe a 5-minute head start, and suddenly she's like on the other side of the world.
You gotta save the baby, dude.
As Dave said when we watched Ran, she's pretty spry for an older person. So she books it, and the next scene is her outside of the castle, like in the barren, desolate land. And she's carrying this baby, and then a little bit later, these rat dogs show up and chase her down, and she sends the baby on its way down the river. And
according to the log line and the Chattopedia, the time skip there is months. Like, so she's apparently
been on the run with the baby.
On the run for months before
she, again, she had a 5-minute head start. Did she take a shortcut? Like, what happened?
She knew what she had to do. She had to save the fucking baby.
Because it's her walking. It's not like she gets on a horse at any point that we see.
They couldn't film a baby that was, like, a week old.
Well, no. I thought they were just doing the classic Hollywood thing of, like, look at this definitely just born 3-month-old baby.
That's what I thought.
I wasn't going to question it, but okay, it's months, sure.
So suddenly Alora becomes Alora Moses.
Send her down the river.
So the baby is sent down the river, and then that's when Willow's two
Frodo
kids... Willow's two kids, I forget what he calls the kids a name too. Like it starts with the R
calls,
or something.
He calls he calls the baby this a couple times. I think he also calls his kids Bobbins.
Bobbins, I think. Yeah, that's what it
Very
is.
Very cute.
So the kids find him, and then they go get Willow, and Willow's the dad, and he's like, No, we're not keeping this. Send it back. Return to sender.
You found a baby?
Yeah. And then and then one thing leads to another, and they end up keeping the baby. And then, sure enough, Willow is also an aspiring sorcerer. So he knows how to do actual, like, magic tricks. Not real magic, but...
Tricks.
Illusions. You know,
tricks. Illusions, yes.
Sleight of hand.
He's like, he's like a magician, like a IRL magician for this fantasy world. Like, he's doing,
And I think that's kind of funny.
Rabbit's going to come out of the hat.
I think that's kind of funny that they have, like, fake magic in a world with real magic. That's kind of funny to me.
That I mean, similar to Ghost, I do love a setup of, like, a, you know, fake magician, a fake psychic who's then like, no, you're a real magician or psychic. Like, you gotta, this is your quest now.
It's almost like, I know this word is said a lot, this term, but
uh-oh.
It's a little bit of brace yourself, Mike. It's a little bit of world building, I do say, that there are varying levels of of sorcery, and that this...
He's rolling his eyes so hard.
And that on this end of the world with the Elwins? Elwins?
Nelwyn?
Elwyn, I think.
The Wait, Elwyn.
The people
like,
are called
they have
Nelwyn.
A sorcerer,
they're called
but he's...
Nelwyn.
Nelwyn.
Nelwyn. Okay. On this end of the world, they have magic, but there's kind of sucks. They have a sorcerer. They have like a head sorcerer in town.
And he is such a sorcerer. This
he
guy.
Is a busted Gandalf.
He's such a busted Gandalf, but he is dressed like a sorcerer.
I want to point out this was nominated for two of the prestigious Golden Raspberry Awards, and one of them was.
Best Gandalf.
For this guy.
Oh,
for
this
Billy
guy.
Barty?
Yeah, which I actually kind of disagree with. I thought he was having fun. Fine. He knows
what
movie season.
We need to disband the Raspberries.
I know.
I'm sorry. I don't like them.
They're very mean-spirited.
I don't like them.
This movie was very okay.
This movie, and as we said...
The other one was screenplay.
It was made with love.
But yeah, this wizard in the town, he's kind of a fraud a little bit. Like, he's like, actually, I don't know. These bones don't tell me jack shit, Willow.
He's like, I don't know.
That was funny.
The bones tell me nothing.
Raise the bones!
Raise the bones!
Well, it's funny because he does have some degree of power. Like, he can throw a rock or apple or something in the air, and it turns into a bird. Like, that's pretty real lame. Magic. What lame?
Basically, like, something happens where they're like, okay, all the bad guys are going to come to the village because of this stupid baby.
They're looking for the baby.
Yeah, the rat dogs show up,
they cause havoc.
And then that's when the sorcerer's like, all right, I'll use the bones to figure out what to do. Like, and
Willow's like, hey, maybe this is unrelated, we found this baby.
And then Willow, it's basically like,
these bones don't tell me anything.
Yeah, he's like, the bones aren't telling me anything, and Willow's like, okay, I'll bring the baby to Mount Doom.
It's like, good idea. Well, the plant, it's so funny because they're like, well, this is a baby of like the tall people. What do they call them? The
Daikini.
The Daikini. And it's like, so you just have to give this baby over to any Daikini, yeah, any tall person.
This is like the first problem of this movie, like in terms of like when it happens. And I'm confused because, okay, so when they decide to make this quest of taking the baby to Daikini land, their mission is to simply give it to the first Daikini that they meet.
It's all at the insistence of this fraud wizard. He's not only a fraud wizard, he's a terrible leader.
Is he give like their the mayor first, too or like, something?
Person you see.
And then, like, so then what happens is when they're still within their realm or where they live, the Nell, what is it?
Nellwinds?
The Shire. When they're still in the Shire. They are chased by Daikinis. So in my head, I'm like, why are you not giving the baby to these Daikinis if that's your mission?
The Daikinis who are like all in black and like looking
they're
evil.
Like, but
they're
not, their mission is not.
He didn't specify the old wizards like, give it to a good one.
Yeah.
But you like, should.
Because then when they get to, when they meet, and this is when it happens, when they meet Val Kilmer's character, Mad Mardigan. Val Kilmer. When they meet Val Kilmer, he's like a prisoner, and they want to give it to him. So there's clearly no standards here. So why don't they just give it to the people who are actually looking for it?
Or like if you'll hand this baby over to some guy trapped in a cage, then like why not just kill the baby? Like if you clearly don't care, just like.
Thank goodness for Willow.
Mardigan was like wanting to take care of the baby, though.
Well, he wanted to be let out of the cage.
Sure, but he was at least like facially expressing,
I will hold this baby and not murder it.
Okay, and then this is another thing. When Willow, so Willow ends up giving it to Mad Mardigan.
Mad Mardigan, please.
Whatever.
This is like a data situation. Mad Mardigan.
Well, one of them is his name.
Yeah, one of them is my name, Peck. The other is not.
Of course you say that. Oh, so this is another thing. So is that word, Peck, I'm pretty sure is like a racial slur.
Yeah, and everyone just is screaming it constantly.
And I don't get it. They never explain where that comes from.
Is it? I thought like, I don't know, you're so small. Mike. It's world building. Like you're so small that like a chicken will like peck
you. This movie's stupid. You're making me go further into my
Sorry, we have to invent this fantasy racism.
But it's the thing about it is that's like very I don't know. There's a moment in where Val Kilmer's character is still in the cage and he's just literally shouting this word.
Yeah, he's like pack, pack, pack.
Peck, 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 peck.
And then the next scene he's like, "Hey, last night was kind of rough, right?" That was funny.
But
we all said some things.
Both of us.
I used, let me count, 137 racial slurs.
I shouldn't.
I
shouldn't have done
that. There's extremism on both sides
here. I shouldn't have said that.
But I wrote an apology in my notes app.
Can you come closer so I can show you?
I'm sorry.
So
one thing leads
to
another, and Willow and Co, or actually it's just his best friend at that point.
It's just Migosh. It's just Samwise Migosh.
Oh, we forgot to mention one of the warriors that accompanies Willow is Lord Nigel from Ghoulies 2. It's all coming back.
Oh, dang.
Wow.
It's all connected.
That's true. Yeah, he's the Shakespearean
all
guy.
Connected.
But they leave it with Val Kilmer's character, and then they take off, and then they find out that, or they see the baby like flying in the air from an eagle or a falcon or something like that, And Willow's like, okay, I got to go back. You know, I got to protect this baby. But here's the thing that's like so dumb about the movie is that his best friend ditches him. Like a good fantasy movie, that
you need
best
your
friend
Sam.
Is like, you're, yeah, exactly. You need that guy. But he ditches him. He's like, oh, well, you know, best of luck.
Well, what I love too is like, I just kind of want to go home. You know what I mean? You know,
it's like, I don't really want to do
probably
this anymore.
Die, but like, this kind of sucks, you know?
I'm sorry. He's no Samwise.
No.
This guy sucks.
Yeah. I really felt bad for Willow because it's like almost like no one cares about Willow. Like,
it's also like, we skipped over a brief moment. It's one of my favorite lines from the movie. It's after they give the baby to Mad Bart again and they leave and they're content and like, yeah, we gave it to that guy, that reputable looking man. Everything is right.
He
in the
did
world.
Promise to take care of her.
And one of the things they say is like,
we'll be heroes. You really think so?
Sure. Look, there's Willow and Miga. The heroes have come home.
Welcome back, boys. You deserve medals.
Yeah, medals.
Yeah.
Oh, hello, boys. You deserve medals.
That was really cute. I loved Dave's delivery of that. He was like, here's some medals.
Again, he's so earnest about it.
Watching that performance, he's playing like a father of two, but again, he's a 17-year-old. He's such a cutie. Like,
all they did was they got rid of a baby.
I know, and they're like, we're gonna be heroes.
You deserve medals.
And they're just kind of like goofing with each other.
It's just so preposterous.
It's very silly.
It's so cool, though. Like, I love Willow.
I love Willow
the character.
And Willow's character, the character of Willow, are so cool to me because they really are. One thing I do like about movies when they do it right is like this embodiment of pure goodness. And I think Willow does do that. Like, he is absolutely pure hearted. Like, he, I think, in a way that's very so earnest. I could see it being maybe annoying to some people, but for me it's like so true. Like, he's really representing this. He's a good character, and I just really like that.
And it's hard to do. I think you're right. His performance pulls it off. It's a hard thing to do in a movie because it makes you. It's a concept in a world that is in a world as shitty as our own. It's such a foreign concept to think that there are legitimately just good people down to their core. Like, I remember one time, Nick, you and I watched Superman the movie, and I think I was saying like I was kind of making fun of the scene in that movie where Superman basically tells Lois Lane in this interview all of his weaknesses, and you rightfully pointed out that you're like, well, no, I kind of like that about Superman because he's such a good person that he can't conceive that anyone would use that information against him.
Yeah. So I do have a precedent for appreciating this kind of embodiment of just pure goodness. And like I said, I mean, despite Willow's flaws, which are, you know, several.
Medals!
At the end of the day, Willow wins me over, for sure. And it's because
Mike is still rolling his eyes.
That's fine. You know, you know, he's jaded. He's not open to...
I'm getting dizzy.
Don't worry, audience. Like, we're gonna put Mike in a crow's cage when this episode's done. We're gonna think about what, you know.
Yeah. So, but anyways, so they, one thing leads to another. Shorten this plot up.
That has been said multiple times during this episode.
I think that's how Lucas originally envisioned the movie too, just to Ron Howard. Like, so well, yeah, one thing leads to another.
For sure, that's how the romance was written. One thing leads to another.
Yeah,
but we
anyway,
do
one thing. Yada yada
it's
yada.
The yada, yada, yada yada yada.
We hear the prophecy from a floaty globy lady
who we never see again. I thought that was a little surprising.
That's another just classic, you know,
not a
fantasy.
Galadriel.
Aladdin. Yeah. What?
Not Galadriel.
She just shows up and then leaves. She never pops up again.
She's like, take care of this baby. Bye.
She's like the leader of like the brownies, right? Is that they all seem to like?
Yeah, she like gave them orders. She's like a fairy, maybe. I don't know.
Now you must, and in great fantasy tradition, now you have to go find this other person to take you to this place to do a thing.
Go do that stuff. I'm not going to hell.
No, she gives him the wand. Like the,
she does give him the wand.
She doesn't even give him like the chainmail, like in Lord of the Rings.
I know, there's no, what is it, the mithril?
Yeah.
They gotta go on a hike in New Zealand. Oh,
actually, doesn't she give them a wand?
A wand, yes.
That's true. Okay, so she does. Okay.
And she does tell him to go to that other, you know, sorceress.
Go to this
lady.
Other sorceress. I won't help you.
What is it with, like, these kind of fantasy things where maybe it's just because this was ripping off Lord of the Rings so much, but like the joke about like Lord of the Rings is just people walking is definitely something I was thinking about this movie. Like, this is so much of this movie is just
a lot
like
of walking.
Walk over there.
It's a quest, Michael.
And on quest, otherwise known as quest. Walking. Then we're in that pub.
This is why
right?
He's not invited back to the D&D game.
I like D&D. I like fantasy.
That's all quests. That's all walking, Michael.
Now, sometimes you can do fast travel.
That's true.
Yeah, anyway, so, I'm sorry, I mean, let's see, where did we leave off? Oh, so they get the, they get advised by this fairy spirit goddess woman, and Willow's like, okay, I'm really doing it. And then they, you know, they track down the baby, because with the brownies... They stole
the brownies
it.
Are like part of their team.
Yeah, they
stole
team
it
up
while
with the
Rad Mardigan was taking a pee-pee.
Yeah. And then they end up at this tavern pub place, and then they
the
reunite.
Pub is cool. I really like this pub.
With Val Kilmer's character, and then, you know, they
was
escape.
Busy having sex with a lady.
Yeah. Practicing carnal acts.
This is I want to pause for a second because this is something I liked a lot, is this is a good fantasy pub. Like, there's...
Oh, yeah.
You walk into it, and it's just like... Ah!
It's just, like, loud and disgusting.
Rowdy. Drinks
just
are being
like
spilled.
Open containers of mead everywhere.
A lady will throw lettuce at
like
you.
There's, like, an open vat of beer.
There's, like, fighting happening. Yeah, it's
people
great.
Probably just doing it in the corner.
Oh, I'm sure.
Okay, Dave.
Naturally.
Naturally.
There's a cat.
There's a cat.
Yeah,
great
so...
Great cat cameo.
Then the Nazgul show up, and they're looking for the baby, and Val Kilmer's character essentially rescues the baby from the place by causing a fight, and then they escape on a horse-drawn carriage. And there's a big, long sequence of them being chased, which is
pretty
exciting.
Cool one.
Yeah,
this is a fun
good.
One.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Oh, and something, it's really aided, we didn't mention this, the music in this movie is done by James Horner, who we've had on the show before. He did the music for Mask of Zorro. He also did Aliens,
Titanic.
Avatar, Titanic.
Oh, a little film called Titanic.
He's done a ton of movies, and it's, I want to bring this up, because I think I mentioned this on the Mask of Zorro episode, And it all comes back to that weirdly. There is a theme in this movie that James Horner uses. I think this is the first time we hear it. It's General Kale's theme. Da-da-da-da. We hear it in Mask of Zorro. We hear it in a bunch of other movies that James Horner has done. And like, it's as great as the theme it is. Like I was about to say, the music during this chase scene and the movie in general is really good. Like, I would say the music's like a high point of the movie in my opinion. I do want to bring this up because, like, as much as I love James Horner, he loves to reuse his own themes. it's kind of interesting. Like, out of all the composers, film composers I've ever heard, he's one of my favorites, but he also is probably the most infamous for reusing, like, the same two or three themes in his movies.
Hey, writing music is hard.
It is.
And if it's that good.
I think he also is, like, mentioned in this movie that he used, like, he copied certain bits of like classical music for his score.
Mm. Well, that's pretty standard. I mean, John Williams does that too. He'll like kind of sort of modern.
I don't think
you
that's
know,
a
great artist steal.
You know, yeah. But also, great music, great action in this chase scene.
I wanted to mention it at some point, and this is as good a time as any. You mentioned the General Kale is like the one of the bad guys. That was so George Lucas said he named that after Pauline Kael, the film critic.
Well,
there's also that like two-headed dragon thing is called an Eberisk, which is supposed to be like Siskel and Ebert.
Oh, George, you don't have to be
Georgie.
Petty.
Oh,
petty.
I think that's cute. It's all in good fun.
It's this was done not so well the same year in the Dirty Harry movie Deadpool, when they flat out just have a Pauline Kael-esque character get murdered.
that's cute, like, and fun.
Not quite as in good taste as this movie. Oh.
General Kael as a name, though, sounds like some, like, Dragon Ball Z-esque guy.
Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, yeah, Kael.
Like... General Kael beats a grisly death, so maybe, as does the Iborisk.
It's different.
It's too silly.
But I guess in the Deadpool, it's literally a film critic that gets murdered. Anyway.
They end up in the snowy mountaintop?
No, first they get to, they travel a little bit more with Val Kilmer.
They get to the place they're supposed to go, but the place has, like, been ransacked by...
They get to the island,
Well,
of...
first they... Yeah. First
oh, yeah, they rescue the sorcerer.
Finn Rizzell.
Sorceress. Yeah, Rizzell, who is...
spends 90% of the movie as either a crow or a lizard? What was it? Or a
muskrat?
First
she's... what is
like
it?
A goat?
A brush-tailed possum.
Right.
When we first hear the fuzzy little marsupial.
Yeah, of course. This is the This is an important character. We can't brush over this moment because she is the character who will say in every scene she's in, Jackie, why don't you say it?
Willow!
Willow!
Loves to say that.
Willow! You idiot!
Yeah, so she's a famous, powerful sorceress. But she's trapped in this body of this creature. I do think I'm of two minds here because, like Dave said, throughout the movie, she is almost entirely like an animal. And I was thinking that if they are going to do this, this is the way to do it, even though, I mean, it's kind of annoying at some point that there's just this animal with them all the time. But at the same time, it's just like, okay, well, Willow goes through numerous attempts of trying to save her, but his magic isn't strong enough, so they turn into like a bigger animal, I guess.
I feel like we mentioned earlier with the brownies, like they do the thing, like the only reason the brownies exist so they could pick the lock. I feel like they could have cut the brownies out entirely and just had Finn Rizzell in various animal forms do the same thing.
Yeah, could have cut the brownies free.
Yeah.
Little earlier,
like I feel like they could have been a thing where they were like suspended by a rope in some cage, and she could have flown in as a bird and like gnawed at the rope or something. Like they could have condensed this a little bit.
Yeah,
maybe so.
I mean, once again, Willow does do a lot of things that I think are kind of inferior to some other fantasy. But I mean, at the end of the day, they do need like a troop, and
yeah. a fellowship, you might say.
One might. For sure. You know, I can't think
I'm
of
sorry,
any other
we gotta have, I, we were going to cut him out of this draft, but George insisted on the brownies. He wanted his little Hidden Fortress nod.
Said he had a really funny idea for...
So
people are really going to like it. I think they're really going to respond to the brownies.
Yeah, then they're captured, and they're gonna go up to the Evil Queen because they found
this
the baby
several times. Like you could, what you just said could be referring to like three or four scenes.
Yeah, they
and they're
captured,
and they're like brought to the Evil Queen. There's definitely some fat that could have been trimmed from this movie.
Well,
okay, let's skip
our...
ahead a little bit. So basically, because this plot is taking forever.
They snowboard down that snowy mountain on a shield. It's pretty cool.
Another, whoa!
George, just a quick note here. I know you had me do, I'm looking at the draft you made. I did the little find and replace thing. People say whoa 2,000 times in this movie. Like,
I think we
maybe
should
scale that back a bit.
Well, you see,
George, the only two words you've written on this draft are willow and whoa.
Well, you see, what you guys don't appreciate is there is a direct correlation between the number of times you say whoa and how exciting the movie is.
Oh, that's true.
It's writing 101, really.
It's a bell curve, Nick. You can, at a certain point, as you start to say whoa more, the excitement dips.
Oh, you're trying to introduce the concept of marginal diminishing returns. I see.
This movie is actually about economics.
I mean, we could develop a whole model, and this movie definitely has not met the equilibrium between Woe and Willow.
Nick, this is war, not economics.
But But
Jurassic Park has the exact right amount of woes, by the way. The gold standard for woes.
Yeah, maybe this movie should have had some dinosaurs.
We could probably skip to the end. I mean, we'll circle back and talk about things like the Ebo risk and
they dropped the baby in the volcano and
yeah. Then, I mean the heart
bing bong boom.
I will say that I think the climax of this movie, which is basically this final battle, is pretty cool. You know, it's very fantasy-esque. You know, he's just storming the castle and everything like that. And then this is so. Anyways, there's a final battle, both between the armies and the wizards.
The wand. There's a great wand battle.
Yeah, there's a great wand battle, which is probably exactly. This is my favorite moment in the movie. The actress who plays Rizelle is like casting a spell, and I guess she couldn't think of anything else to say as a spell incantation, so she just goes, na 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 na.
There's a lot of there's some like language that they're like. There's a few scenes where they slip into this other language that would be like Elvish or something, and it's very clear they have like not written a language like
it's just
like
do
Tolkien did.
Say gibberish.
Yeah, like, I don't know, make something up here.
Say magic stuff.
That's exactly what the direction was. That's the direction from old Ron Howard.
Yeah, George Lucas didn't actually write any spells, so he just said make it up.
Yeah, so just make it up. All right.
George, I don't know if we want him to say abracadabra. That's a little... come up with something else.
But
if you won abracadabra.
So I will say that I think the callback to Willow's pig disappearing pig trick
was
pretty
cute.
Clever.
That was cute.
And this is the other thing. The movie has practical magic, the magic that we know in our world, outsmarting the real magic. So some pretty sophisticated commentary.
See,
right
I mentioned the layers, pretty Mike. You rolled your eyes. But...
I mean, this is the kind of, I mean, moments like these really elevate the movie to like a film versation worthy.
Oh, yeah.
Right, Mike?
Yes.
Would this movie make the list, Mike?
Any movie is worthy of a film versation. And no, it would not make it would not make my list. Maybe it would make me.
Back to
Micah!
There's another moment right before the battle starts where the freaking evil queen, whatever her name is,
Bavmorda,
she turns everyone to pigs except Willow because he protects himself. And this part of the movie is actually like pretty gross and pretty cool. There's this,
they don't hold back.
Yeah, exactly. Like you got like this practical effects. Val Kilmer's face is turning into a pig. And it's like gradual, very body horror esque. And there's
this
one moment in particular that's like out of a Cronenberg film where this guy is like on his back, half of his body is mutated into a pig, and half of his is still human, and he's like flailing. It's really, really gross.
Because
cool.
You see them like, ah!
Yeah.
Was this something as a. For those of you who watched this as a kid, do you remember that being like, whoa?
It was a little scary. I remember as a kid, yeah.
Sure, it did scare me as a kid, but my only memory was of the silly brownie stuff. To go back to what Nick was saying real quick about the goodness of, you know, Willow and a character like that, Willow! of a character like that, and that, like, him saving the day at the end is not because of, like... He was a super special chosen one, you know, guy, but he's just like, he's just nice and he has his tricks and he's good and he's doing a good thing. And that like, he's wrapped up in this whole prophecy because the magical baby like chose him because he was nice to her, because he cared for her. Like, as he's just like, I have to protect this baby. And then the baby was like, cool, you're in my gang now. You're part of this prophecy. But, it's not one of those stories where it's like, and you were the special all along. Like, he's still just a guy, but he's a good guy. He's good and nice and, doesn't want a baby to die.
And really, I think to add to that, he ends up saving the day because, not because he actually, like, acquired a new skill or real magic. He saved the day using a trick he already knew.
Yeah.
And so I think that kind of, there's some parallels to like the goodness of him, of his character, mm-hmm. like was so consistent it won out.
Yeah, he doesn't have to like change necessarily in a huge way like that. He can just use the good stuff that he already knows and in his wits.
Can we talk about how this ends? Because I'm like, so they like save the baby, and he comes back, and I like the scene where I like his wife, the actor who's playing his wife, I think is really good.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
it's such a small role, but I think she like crushes it, and that's a nice moment where they like reunite. But was there gonna be like a sequel to this or something? Because like I feel like we should see like the baby doing something, or like something happens to like, yeah, and that's why the baby was special. But we like never, they have like a MacGuffin that never has.
It's just like, the queen's gonna, baby will grow up to one day, like,
and eventually something will happen, and like cool stuff will happen later that we're not
like 20 years.
Like defeats, like, you know, ends her reign, and she'll be like a good queen, basically.
Yeah,
again, it's like basic. It's like ending like it's like ending A New Hope, and like, all right, so that's how we're going to take out the Death Star, and we know how we're going to do it now. All right, credits.
No, she fulfilled the prophecy. She defeated Bev. Well, I guess technically the baby didn't defeat Bev Morda like everyone else did, but...
But presumably one day this baby will be a good ruler, ?
I guess that's what it is.
Well, she's a baby. There's going to be a lot. She's not going to be able to rule now.
Well, they say the prophecy is like she'll put an end to Bev Morda's rule and be like a... And that's kind of it. And I guess, kind of.
Well, yes, Bev Morda's gone, baby. So the prophecy's already kind of been fulfilled in a way.
So she's peaked.
Yeah, she peaked early.
Maybe that's what the sequel's going to be about, is an adult Alona or Allura or whatever being like, it sucks when you peak as a 3-month-old. I haven't done shit.
Speaking of the ending, like, so... Queen Bev Morda, I'm trying to understand what she's doing, because she doesn't just kill the baby. Like, she has to do, like, some sort of, like, ritual that takes all night. She has to call...
It seems like she should just be able to kill the baby.
I didn't really understand what she was doing. Like, was she trying to cast the baby into some different realm or something?
Yeah, I think it was, like, banished from the world or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like if what I inferred was that if she did not... kill the baby through this ritual that would send its spirit or soul.
It would just come back.
Yeah, exactly.
In a different body.
It would be
later.
Reborn. Okay. Yeah, so it's like a purification ritual or something like that.
Okay, Bob. Bob, whatever your name
Dolman.
Was.
Dolman.
Okay.
Dolman.
This is sound.
Sure.
Bob Doll, man. This is a sound moment. Okay, I'm sorry I questioned it.
How dare you?
Yeah, the script is, it's rock
solid. Perfectly thought out.
Yeah.
No holes.
George and I talked about this for months, okay? We ironed out all the problems.
Yeah.
We got it.
In fact, you people ought to be giving us medals.
I'm sure George thought he was going to get a medal for this.
Yeah, I imagine Bill Dollman and George Lucas just talking, walking around in Marin County in Lucas Ranch or whatever, Skywalker Ranch, and just saying like, oh, they're going to love us. The critics, especially Pauly Kael and Siskel and Ebert, will love this movie.
Siskel and Ebert did give this 2 thumbs down.
Aww.
I was thinking, like, I wonder what, like, Val Kilmer was thinking, like, this is like George Lucas, and now we're going into fantasy instead of sci-fi. This is going to be my Star Wars.
And then the door opens, and then Ron Howard walks out like, hi, I'm Ron. It's like, wait a minute, what?
Where's Spielberg? Where's Kasdan?
Do you think Val Kilmer went into this being like, I could be the next Harrison Ford? Like,
this is definitely a Han Solo character.
Totally. That's what this character is supposed to be, yeah. And I was kind of joking at the end, but does anyone know, like, were there sequels talked about for this?
I'm sure there might have been, like, comics or something or other, but they eventually did get around to making... I hear a Disney Plus show, which totally tracks that this seems like, because again, like I mentioned, Willow is a property, is a movie that wasn't immediately successful. It had to endure and become successful. It's kind of a cult movie to some degree, I think. Like it wasn't really discovered until VHS, I think. Like
did well internationally too.
Well, internationally, yeah, but like it didn't really gather a sequel. It didn't gather an audience to warrant a sequel until it hit video. I think
its budget was 35, and it made 137 million, which is
worldwide.
Seems good.
Yeah.
Seems good.
Yeah, that's a good ROI.
I think the problem was, I might be mistaken, but I think the problem was, like, Who Framed Roger Rabbit came out around the same time, and it's like, you got two movies, Roger Rabbit and Willow, you're going to go with Roger Rabbit.
This was, it was nominated for a couple Oscars, and one of them was special effects, and it lost to Roger Rabbit.
I think rightly so. Now, granted, in all fairness to Willow, this does have, like, some, you know, the dawn of CGI type stuff going on with, like,
yeah,
the morphing
effects.
Yeah, and
I think some of it looks good. Like, it holds up.
Yeah, yeah. I would say, honestly, as a whole, I think the effects hold up pretty well, I think.
Yeah, I do, too. I think that's one of the best things about the movie.
Yeah. Like we said, the money's on the screen.
There's one other thing that I wanted to mention that I think the movie does kind of unique, and that's their version of trolls.
They look like the guys from 2001.
I don't necessarily mean the way they look, but the what they can do. They can, like, crawl in shadows and, like, be spider-esque. They're pretty creepy, actually.
Trolls.
So.
Why is it always trolls?
Trolls. That's one thing I'm shocked that no one said in this movie was, I have a bad feeling about this.
Did you guys hear all the like several Wilhelm screams?
Yeah.
There was a few. Yeah. Oh, and speaking of the sound, you get those, like, good old fashioned Indiana Jones punches.
Yeah.
Whip it a thump.
Hell yeah.
Oh,
so
I guess that's Willow.
You mentioned, so that's kind of the movie. Willow saves the day with his regular old magic, his sleight of hand.
Delusions!
Vin Russell or whatever gives him, like, a Magic for Dummies book that he can learn from. And then I guess they do a fresh paint job on the castle because now it's white.
Thing. It's good. It's
They power washed it.
Yeah, it was just dirty.
Just grime.
Just all the muck.
It was just covered in filth.
Muck.
Yeah, and so and presumably Mad Mardigan and Shorsha. I don't even think we didn't really talk about Shorsha much.
She's
is there to say?
She sure is there.
She's like, he loves me, and she turns from a villain to a hero. I guess, you know, pretty probably the poorest writing in the movie. And Willow goes home. But there's one thing I wanted to mention. We talked about the pigs being scary. This might be a little embarrassing to admit, maybe. I don't know. Maybe not as a kid.
I thought they were sexy.
As a kid, I was always scared by General Kale. Like, he was just a scary presence to me as a little kid. That skull mask.
He's got
it's a scary mask.
He looks very Power Rangers villain.
Yeah. But I always remember being really scared when he died. And I remember I felt like one of the coolest moments in the movie as a kid, and honestly still not to this day, is the final battle when Mad Mardigan is fighting General Kale. And he has that move where he bashes the guy's skull mask with his sword, and it, like, breaks apart, like, at the jawline. I always remember thinking as a kid, like, that was the most gnarly thing I'd ever seen.
I think he shouldn't have taken his helmet off.
Scarier, like, with the helmet
he
off.
Took the helmet off pretty early on, and yeah. He's clearly like a Darth Vader but make it fantasy character, and I think it, like, the second that you see him take his helmet off, I think it takes a lot of
he's
the
just
wind.
Some guy.
Like, oh, there's some guy.
Yeah,
that could have been a cool reveal at the end when he falls off the bridge and his mask flies off and he's got, like, some disfigured face or something.
Yeah, that
could have
been
Matt Morgan's father.
Or just
my God.
For example.
Or just
for
seeing
example.
It's like a guy, like, and the whole time maybe you're not necessarily sure if it's just, like, a person or something.
Or a demon guy.
That's my
or
note.
Something.
That's my note. You shouldn't have taken the helmet off until the end.
I don't agree with
before...
that note.
Do you tell me you have a theory, Nick.
No, I don't have a theory. I just don't. I think he was a scary dude.
I think it worked.
Because he looked scary even without his mask.
Mm.
Not as much.
Mm.
I think he should have maintained the mask. Because honestly, I remember I had a thought as a kid. Like, I mean, obviously it was blown away when he took his mask off, but he had, like, an otherworldly presence to him with that mask.
Yeah,
on.
That's the thing, is, like, you don't know what's under the mask. Like, it could not be. Maybe that's just him. Like, maybe you don't.
He is a gross skull
thing. Like, he's some
thing.
Kind of troll monster skull thing, or I don't know, but.
He is a Skeletor.
Yeah, maybe he was a Skeletor. I don't know.
Maybe
he
was a Skeletor.
What's the actor's name?
Pat Roach.
Who takes the helmet off, and then he's just Pat Roach.
Well, but I think Pat Roach is a scary dude, so.
He is a scary dude. We've all seen him. He is, like, the big muscle-bound Nazi that Indiana Jones fights outside the plane.
You know what's scary is Nazis.
Oh, yeah, that guy. I know.
He also plays Hitler in Indiana Jones and Last Crusade.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
So Hitler is always a good note to end on for a podcast, right?
Whoa, he was in Never Say Never Again.
And now it's the Pat Roach podcast.
Yeah, we're the Pat Roach podcast.
Well, he does have 23 films, so we can.
Oh, he was in A Clockwork Orange.
Okay.
Really, he was?
We can get some classy movies on this joint.
Wow. Hmm.
Well, this is as impressive a filmography as Ron Howard.
Well, I have a question now that we're wrapping up. So, Mike, now that we've talked about all the great stuff that happens in Willow and how endearing it all is, have your thoughts changed at all in the course of this conversation?
No.
All right, to the crow's nest with you then.
Sorry.
It was fun talking about it. This is better, to be clear. This is better than Cutthroat Island. This is better than Indian in the Cupboard, but it gave me some flashbacks to not Indian in the Cupboard, but to Cutthroat Island, the way that there's like, it's just a lot of stuff happening. And like, I feel like not really connected to kind of what's going on.
Michael!
Willow!
Well, that's one. This is when I wish I had some magical powers that I can turn a rock into a bird that would then poop on Michael's face.
Just watch Lord of the Rings if you want to watch.
I don't know what that is.
Like, why would you watch? This is definitely Lord of the Rings. This is classic. Like, we don't need Lord of the Rings, Michael. We have Willow at home.
Okay, but that's not a fair criticism at all, because Lord of the Rings wasn't out yet, unless you're talking about the animated film.
Well, no, I'm not. That's not a criticism. That's just my message to the Wastelanders out there. Like, the Wastelanders, I guess if you don't have access to Lord of the Rings and you need
some store-bought Willow,
someone like a Shire-like group of people walking a thing to a thing, then this is the movie for you.
And I will say, like, if you're in that scenario, it's not like you're going to be roughing it with Willow. As we said, like, cool stuff happens in the movie. Like, it does have some flaws, but the effects are fun. Warwick Davis is really just, like, the heart of this movie. He's the reason to watch it, I think.
Yeah.
If you're a Warwick super fan, watch it for sure.
Which, definitely, like, yeah. Hey, yeah.
It's fun to see him get, like, a leading role.
You just wrapped up your Leprechaun marathon. You want more Warwick?
And again, just a teenage ball of light where you're like, look at that guy.
You know what I will say to like this movie's credit over Lord of the Rings is like they had the guts to like, hey, our race of little people, we're gonna actually use like little people.
True,
actors.
we're employing dwarf actors.
To be fair, though, if George Lucas had his way, he wouldn't have to work with actors. He would just create everything in a computer. And but then he didn't direct this movie. It was directed by Salt of the Earth, Ron Howard.
Was every man Salt Ron Howard. Normal guy.
Well, I'm going to break the mold, Mike, and say I would recommend this movie. I think it's charming. It's not without its flaws, but as I said, it's a fun time.
I would also recommend it's fun and silly and cute. And if you watched it as a kid and remember it at all, it's fun to rewatch.
So for me, if you like fantasy, then I would recommend
definitely.
It. If you don't like fantasy, because I think there's a number of people, that's why fantasy in general is kind of hard to sell, I think, because it's not as many people are on board with it. I think a lot of people, you know, do so have a lot of tropes in their mind, you know.
It's a genre, you know.
Goofy names and stuff like that. So if you don't like fantasy, you definitely will not like Willow. But if you're on board with fantasy, I definitely think it's a fun movie, especially if you have any nostalgia attached to it. But yeah, I definitely, like, if you like fantasy at all, I give it a shot. I mean, I'm still on board with Willow. I think, like I said, it's very endearing to me.
I have an admission here. I got a little teary-eyed when Willow and Finn Mazell stand up. You think they're standing up to them by themselves. And, you know, it's just, I love those little moments when Finn Mazell is like, you are truly a great sorcerer, Willow. You know what I mean? I love those moments.
Willow! And it's you screaming that, crying.
And just that moment at the end when him and his wife embrace at the end and that song comes on.
That's
my favorite scene in the movie.
Mike did say this, but I mean, Willow's wife is a rock star. Like, you really feel like she loves Willow. Like, I don't know. Their family dynamic is really cool too. I don't know. I mean, I'd be down for a couple more minutes, hang out with them.
Yeah. Let's see the Mrs. Willow.
Well, I'm sorry, Mike. That's three recommends and one not recommend. So I guess we win the day.
I guess we banish you to Nether Realm.
Oh, man.
And on that note, we have now banished Michael to a place where evil can touch him. He's got to do a little penance for his thoughts on Willow. We're throwing him around the store right now. He's just being thrown against the walls.
He learns his lesson.
But that'll do it for this episode of Apocalypse Video. This was a fun one. I'm glad we finally got to Willow, guys.
We finally got to Willow.
I wonder how that Disney Plus show is.
Yeah, we'll find out.
I know.
Well, that'll do it for this episode, folks. Remember to keep magic in your hearts. And remember, Willow!
Excuse me, sir.
Out of the way, Pick.